The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, you might know him for being one half of Rubber Bandits or for his podcast that has over 90 million listeners worldwide. Well, the award-winning author, podcaster and documentary maker known as Blind Boy has just recently won Best Documentary Presenter at the Grierson Awards in London. And what they said about Blind Boy, Land of Slaves and Scholars, jurors applauded this documentary for bringing a fresh, personal and deeply thought-provoking perspective to the screen. With honesty, poetic insight and a uniquely engaging voice, this presenter drew audiences into subjects they might not normally explore, challenging perceptions and sparking genuine reflection. Their authenticity and originality make their work both distinctive and profoundly impactful. Blind Boy, good morning and congratulations.
Oh, thanks so much, Pat. How are you getting on? Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you. What will Christmas be like for Blind Boy?
Do you know, just loads of walking. I love going for walks. The canal there in Limerick City. I'll just do loads of walking and I'm focusing a lot on mindfulness recently, like deliberate acts of mindfulness, as in choosing, I'm going to go for a walk for the next half hour and the only thing I'm going to do on this walk is focus on the sound of my breath or the sound of my feet or notice a leaf or something. So that's what I'm going to be doing for Christmas.
Like, it sounds very quiet, very, very,
very, very quiet,
very restful, actually.
Well, that's the thing. I'm so busy all the time that the 4 or 5 days around Christmas, like I don't have to do work. So I'm going to be using this. I won't be using it to celebrate. I'm going to be using it to be as quiet as possible and be quite meditative.
Now, I know that your head is not turned by awards. You have been, I suppose, awarded many times and your work has been recognised. But still, this is a long time coming for RTE, for example.
I mean, yeah, the Grierson Award, it's the first RTE documentary to get it in 20 years. So that's, like, I've been doing bits and pieces with RTE for 15 years. I started my career out there. So that feels wonderful to be able to bring that home. And then, I mean, I wasn't expecting it at all. I don't make documentaries or write books to try and win awards. And as well as that, even when I get an award, they're kind of dangerous. And what I mean is, I acknowledge it and it's nice to get that award. But if I focus on awards or even focus on external praise, that gets in the way of the creative process. I mean, I make documentaries and I write books because I love doing it. It's a playfulness. It's a curiosity. I like the bit in the middle. And when awards start stepping in, it's a little bit like Leaving Cert points, you know? Like school can be very enjoyable and you can have fun. And then it becomes reduced to this one number at the end. And it's inaccurate. And the other thing as well about documentaries, creativity. There's no such thing as awards. I know I won an award, but that does not mean that my documentary is better or worse than anyone else's. You can only be the best version of yourself. You can only compete with yourself, you know?
Yeah, but you'll be hoping that when you get an award, that it might point people in the direction of a documentary who might not otherwise have found it. You know, people are impressed.
Absolutely.
Who wins an Oscar? Oh, I must go see that movie because it got an Oscar. That kind of thing. So it does point people in your direction.
Oh, yeah. And what I do with that is I compartmentalize that and I just say, isn't that great for the business of making documentaries? That's just the business side. But my job is, here's what I love about that award. That means the likelihood of me getting to make another documentary and to have more control and to do what I want to do, that now increases because of that award. So I just can't wait to move on. I don't know what the next thing will be, but I can't wait to move on to the next thing just for the joy of doing it, the bit in the middle.
Will you remind our listeners maybe who haven't listened to Land of Slaves and Scholars exactly what it is? I mean, you take a skewed look at our history and the history of Christianity in Ireland.
It's when I'm creating something, I deliberately try to fail. I know that sounds mad, right? But the thing that will stop someone creating is the fear of failure. And a great way to get around the fear of failure is to begin by failing. And what something simple like that is, I was asked to make a documentary about early Irish Christianity. So instead of making a documentary about early Irish Christianity, I chose failure. I said, I'm not going to make a documentary about early Irish Christianity. I'm going to make a documentary about the history of writing in Ireland. So that's what I did, even though it appears to be a documentary about Christianity. When Christianity came to Ireland in the 5th century with Patrick, there was Palladius before him, but here's the thing. Here's why we remember St. Patrick. He did not just bring Christianity, he brought the brand new technology of writing. And that's what this documentary is about. And you can look at early Irish Christianity and you think it's about the saints. It's about this brand new technology called writing. And for us here today to get our heads around the idea of something like writing arriving, and then you start thinking about what was Ireland like before writing? Because we had epic, we had the town, we had all this mythology, but no one's writing it down. How are you remembering these huge stories when you can't write it down with the technology? So that's what this documentary is about. And when writing came to Ireland with Christianity, it became a way to entrench power. You could have had all these different families and clans in Ireland. And now all of a sudden the monk shows up with an iPad, effectively, this magical book. And the monk could say to the local king, I'm going to write in this book that your ancestors owned this land, and we'll connect that to God somehow. So that's what I was fascinated about with this documentary.
And therefore, the writer could own the story. I mean,
yeah,
the oral tradition handed down from father to son to daughter, whatever, and retold and retold. When it gets written down, the person who's doing the writing and many of the people who were telling the story, they couldn't read. This monk wrote it down. He wrote his own story, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. And that's I covered that in the documentary too. That's hagiographies. And hagiographies are the biographies of saints, but they're made up they're Marvel superhero stories, you know? You have stories about Saint Kevin apparently had his Bible stolen by an otter, you know? Mm-hmm. And there was Saint Gubnet could control insects with her mind. When you look at them critically, really what they are is very, very entertaining superhero stories. But a lot of it was about entrenching power in monasteries, you know. Every monastery wanted to be more powerful than the other one. So it's like, we've got the best saint. I mean, that's what relics as well. I'm fascinated by relics.
By the way, when you talk about how some saints have endured, and maybe rightly so, but when you think of St. Patrick, I mean, he had brand recognition. He had the shamrock. Pretty good brand. St. Bridget had the cross. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Great branding. And then, I mean, the Patrick is the first person ever to write anything in Ireland. That's what I love about Patrick. His confessions. Patrick's confessions, which you can read, that's the first thing to ever be written in Ireland. And he wrote that in Latin. And they're brilliant because it's almost a Father Ted thing. If you read Patrick's confessions, which he wrote later in his life, there's a bit of there was money resting in the account thing. And I was accused of a couple of things, but those people are wrong. And then my favourite part of all, of course, in Patrick's confession, this is written in the 500s. He mentions meeting Irish sailors. And when Irish people met each other back then, they would suck each other's nipples.
Did you
know about that?
No, yeah. I did not. No.
Yeah, so Patrick mentions it. It was whatever was going on in Ireland pre-Christianity. The way to meet another person was to suck their nipples. And it's this one thing that's there in Patrick's confession. And then sometimes when bog bodies are dug up, and the bog bodies are 1,500 years old, some bog bodies that are ritualistically killed in Ireland have their nipples removed. And there's some archaeologists that connect that with Patrick's writing, that they reckon possibly kingship in Ireland before Christianity had something to do with fertility and the land and the nipple. Like, even the other day up in Newgrange, we don't know, like, we don't know why the solstice was observed like that 3,000 years ago. So we can only guess. But one very good guess is the people who built Newgrange were farmers. We know that they were farmers that probably came from Turkey, around Turkey 9,000 years ago, the Fertile Crescent. But the theory is the sun comes in on the 21st of December into that narrow chamber and effectively impregnates the land, the goddess of the land, that the land is a goddess and the sun impregnates it, and that's the fertility of the land. And the local king was married to the land. And if that king failed, if there was a famine, if there was a storm, the king was blamed and was sacrificed. And they think the nipple cutting off thing might be related to that. I'm going on an awful tangent there, Pat.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking though, if the as happens, as we know ourselves over the years, you get a cloudy day on the 21st. What impact does that have? If the land therefore does not get impregnated by the sun in a particular year because it's lashing rain, you know, what's the implication for the crops?
We've got science now, so we're lucky about that. But back in the day, the king might get the blame, you know? Because that's his wife and he's not doing his job. He's not fertilizing the land or you know what I mean?
Now, you're going to have a nice restful Christmas walking along the canal bank or whatever, meditating and concentrating on whatever it might be, the sound of a bird or your own breathing or your footfall. But come January, February, you're going to be mad busy again, aren't you?
I've got all my live podcasts. Yeah.
Vicar Street, February the 4th, and then you're back again in Vicar Street on the 20th of April. You're in the Waterford on February the 12th, Leisureland Galway on February the 15th. And you can't tell me what's going to happen in those because, quite frankly, we don't know.
I've been doing my live podcast for 8 years now. I mean, it's gotten, I can't imagine. I did Hammersmith Apollo last year, which was, it sold it out, 3,000 people. I'm going all over the world with it. People listen to my podcast and they want to show up. And what I do with my live podcast, I don't plan the guests. I don't tell people who the guest is going to be. And it's a conversation, but I kind of set it up more like a piece of theatre. So you're not showing up to a chat. I use the visual language of theatre. So it feels like a play that's unfolding in the moment, you know? And that's why too, if you look at any of my gigs, I deliberately put them on like Tuesday nights, Wednesday nights. I take the nights that other people don't want because when it comes to my live podcast, it's much more like going to the theatre or going to the cinema. You know, it's not like the weekend where you have to maybe book a babysitter in the next day because you might have a hangover. I do very, very peaceful nights of conversation that use the visual language of theatre. And people seem to love them because I'm able to go all around the world with them. I'm going to be in Berlin with it. I played the biggest sit-down venues in Australia with them. I can't explain it. It's just, I'm going with it, you know?
Now, we played at the very beginning of the show, we played a clip from the last conversation we had, you and I, and this was, the mask and the shopping bag, and you'd said you got thousands from a supermarket and swords. And there's a danger you might run out. I'm just wondering, will the mask ever go? Or is it your trademark, a bit like St. Patrick and the Shamrock? Or is it a tyranny now?
The plastic bag may go because I'm physically running out of that literal plastic bag and I didn't think my career was going to last this long, I'll be honest. So, and sometimes what I do as well, I've started using a custom-made bag that's made out of kind of a cotton, but that's just so when I'm on the radio like this, I don't want people listening to the sound of the plastic. So I'm wearing a cotton bag right now, so it's nice and soft, you know, so you don't hear it at all. No, I'm never going to take off that bag. The thing is, I love having a private life. I love having a nice, quiet, private life. And as I mentioned at the start, I do this because I love doing it. I don't do it for awards. I don't do it for accolades. I love, absolutely adore making documentaries. I love writing books.
Don't you know that as you walk along the canal, there'll be people looking out for a fella who's listening to his footfalls and saying, oh, that's him. That's him.
It happens all the time. I have to be careful about what clothes I describe on my podcast because I'll have people looking for my specific jacket. That's actually a thing in my life that I have to consider.
Blind Boy Book Club, it is a pleasure as always talking to you. May I wish you a very happy and peaceful Christmas and thank you very
you too,
much for
Pat.
Joining us. All the best.
God bless. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
God bless.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.